Thank you. My name is... Hi. What is my name? My name is Edie, and I'm an addict alcoholic. Thanks for the sign. That was really sweet. If you're new, I want you to know that that's really an acknowledgement, because they didn't want me around when I first got here. I can't see anybody, but I would like to know if there's anybody in the first 30 days of sobriety. Would you just raise your hand for me? Are you there? I would like to welcome you. I would like to welcome you and let you know that you're the God. You're very important in this program. Am I nervous? My sponsor's sitting over here, and she tells me it's all up to God. I went backstage and I got on my knees right in front of the toilet, because that's where I get a lot of my pain. And these lights are so bright, I cannot see hardly anybody. I don't like that. Can you do something about that? Probably not. So I've learned in sobriety, ask for what you want. It's been a big lesson for me. I know how spiritual I am, contingent on how my ass is in sort of convulsions, you know. So it's going to be spiritual, so get ready. I get dressed and God does the rest, and I can feel God getting ready to kick in here any minute. To tell you what it was a little... if I could just get it out. To tell you what it was like for me, my childhood, I grew up in San Francisco. I was born in San Jose. So when I came across the Bay Bridge, this is really special. I would like to thank the people who sent in my tapes. My sponsor sent one, of course, and some other people. And I want to thank you, because this is an incredible honor for me. And I want to thank the committee for the wonderful dinner. And it's a long way from the Fillmore. It's a long ways from the Fillmore. I grew up in low-income housing out in the Fillmore. I had a bad attitude. I'm always grateful to be able to share the meeting of Alcoholics Anonymous, because when I was 2 years old, I lost my mother. My mother never made it to a meeting of Alcoholics Anonymous. And I know that suicide is a choice for us when the alcohol and the drugs quit working, and that's the only way out for us. And that's the way that my mother... I was 3 years old, and they had been drinking all weekend, and it was a Monday afternoon, and she walked down the hall, she walked into her bedroom, she took a gun, and she shot herself. If you think that I have issue of abandonment, we'll get into that later. So my mother was Mexican and Indian, and her last name was Valdez. She married a white man, I don't know why, probably just because of... They say that I'm an awful lot like my mother, and it's probably because they told her not to. I'm one of those kind that as soon as you tell me I can't, I have to. I think it's the nature of our disease. But I've got 30 minutes. I got the green light going here. I've got 30 minutes to tell you about my life, and I have so much to share with you. So it's interesting what I'm going to choose to share with you. I'm not even sure. But what I want to tell you is that I'm not one of those kind of people that lectures you and tells you about what you've got to do to stay sober. I figure if you're here, it's because God has graced you with sobriety. And that if you are here, it's because you are chosen. And if you would like to stay here, it's very important that you work the steps and that you get involved. But I'm not going to go through the steps telling you how I did. 1, 2, and 3. I'm going to tell you about my life, and you're going to see how sobriety and the miracle has taken place in my life. So if you're wanting a lecture, you need to leave now. I had my first drink when I was 9 or 10 years old. I grew up in the kind of environment where they talk about in big books of Alcoholics Anonymous, seeking Miller companionship. I didn't grow up with the kind of people that had a Buick Electra, lived in a tract home, and progressed from there. We were always just living in a Ford. When I was 10 years old, and I didn't come from goal-oriented people. When I was 10 years old, first time I was in treatment, I was with someone, and she asked me what I did for a living. I said, I'm a carpenter. And I said, what do you do for a living? She says, I'm a values clarification counselor. I was full of hate and self-pity, and I didn't even know if I had any. But that's another story. So I've got so many stories, and I only have 30 minutes. I told him at dinner, I can do 10 and I can do 45. I can't do 30. So you got a hook, get it out. Boy, it's amazing how my nervousness is taking over this evening. So I had my first drink in an old beat-up Ford in an old bar by the name of the 19th Hole. I was one of those kind of kids, and I have a little brother, and we grew up a lot in old beat-up cars behind old beat-up bars. And you learn how to mimic the people that you grow up with. And since I told you that, did I tell you what I wanted to be when I was 10? I'll tell you what I wanted to be when I was 10. I told you about that values clarification counselor, and I forgot. But when I was 10 years old, I knew that I didn't want to be an alcoholic, I knew I didn't want to be a whore, and I knew I didn't want to live in a Ford. And thanks to Alcoholics Anonymous, I don't live in a Ford. But I had my first drink in a Ford. You know, and you learn how to mimic those people that you grow up with, you know, and they always have that bottle underneath the seat, and they used to pull that bottle out from underneath the seat. They used to crank the top off of it, and they used to take a big squid and kick it back. And they'd give it to the next one, and they'd pass it around, you know, and they'd put the lid back on, and they'd put it underneath the seat. And I don't know why this day was any different, but it was. And we'd been in the car for 4 or 5 hours, and after you've been in the car for 4 or 5 hours, they have you lay down because the authorities get a little anxious about kids hanging out in cars outside of bars more than 4 or 5 hours. So they said that they were going to go have a quick one. They'd be right back, and it was already dark, you know. And I was laying down on the seat underneath the the steering wheel. And I reached underneath there, and I felt that bottle, you know. So I pulled that bottle out, and from the light of the bar, I could see that there was like this much of the whiskey left in the bottle. And I cranked the lid off, and I kicked it back, and I took my very first drink. You know, it was straight Sigmund 7. You know any of the whiskey drinkers out there? Yeah. So you know what it feels, and then by the acknowledgement that you just gave me, then you know what it felt like when it went down. It sucked the wind right out of me, right? It came out of my tear ducts, out of my ears, and I couldn't breathe, you know? But what happened for me is what I believe happens for alcoholics, and it only happens for alcoholics, and it's the magic took place for me, because it burned all the way down inside my gut, and for the first time in my life, I didn't care. Alcohol worked for me for a long time. See, I was 2 years old, and I was so full of hate, and so full of shame, and so full of resentment, that when I was 10, it already worked for me. You know, I remember living out in the Fillmore, and I got to tell you this story because it I'm going to tell it for the new people because I have a real problem with surrender. Don't we all? Oh, no, not some of us, but I did. We were living, you know, they've torn it down now, but it was out in the film where those kind of three-story high-rise. They had the kind of bathrooms that they have in prison so people can't beat them up with sledgehammers and stuff like that. Real nice place to be from. But what you learn is that you learn who lives there, and you know who doesn't live there, and you just have an instinct. And I must have been 6 or 7 years old, and I had this nickel, and I was scraping up this big wad of gum off the ground. Big old bozo. I hadn't been chewed all the way, you know. And I know I did it because they told me not to. So, but I had this lady coming at me, boy, and she was zoomed in on me, and I looked up at her, and I knew she must have been a social worker, an Avon lady, or something like that. And I knew that she didn't live there. And the closer she got, the louder her nylons got. She got up real close to me and she said, "Little girl, why don't you take that nickel and go buy yourself some gum?" And I looked up at that lady and I said, "Because I want to chew this gum, that's why." I got to Alcoholics Anonymous in 1980. I was 25 years old. And I had some problems with surrender. I had a problem with acknowledging the fact that I was a woman alcoholic. After my mother died, my father gave me to my mother's sister's daughter. That was my cousin, right? You guys taking notes here? It gets complicated. So what happened is she'd already lost her own children because she was an unfit mother. Doesn't take much in the state of California, and my dad had a resentment, and he was getting even with the Valdez family because they blamed him for my mother's death. Because, see, we're good Catholics, and good Catholics don't commit suicide because they don't go to heaven. So, here we got a daddy with a resentment, we got a cousin who's already lost her children, and there we are, my little brother, his name's Joaquin Chain, my name is Edith Francis Cartwright. His name is Joaquin Chain, all right. There's a story behind that. I hope they give me time to get to it. Now, we're just having fun here. Now, don't you guys get a resentment there in the front row? What happened, though, is that I spent the next 10 years of my life growing up with a woman in the depths of alcoholism. And what it is like she took my hand and she took my little brother's hand and she took me to the places that alcohol and drugs will take you if you're a woman alcoholic. And I got to live in places like in Watsonville, an old beat-up hotel room that didn't have any sheets on the mattresses and they had artichoke boxes for furniture. And she would crawl across the room for a bottle of wine. Just to keep the shit off of it. So, see, when I came to my first meeting and they told me I was alcoholic, I had a car. I had a job and I had never done that. See, so I didn't think that I was an alcoholic. God, you know what? Today, my sobriety is the essence of my life. And I am so glad that I'm an alcoholic. And I am a lesbian. It's so hard. You know, what's happening here is that I have so much to tell you, and I don't know where to start, and then I got kind of emotional, and I forgot. God, you know, say, you know, my heart is so open tonight, you know, and I feel so at home. I get asked to speak a lot in straight conferences, and, you know, it's almost like I'm ashamed to tell you that the majority of the time I don't acknowledge the fact that I'm gay. And so there was a part of me that didn't feel like I was gay, good enough, and right enough to come here and talk. Maybe if I'll just get that out of the way, I can get on with this thing. You know, what I've learned is that a lot of people come to Alcoholics Anonymous and they get real, real good. And what happens to me when I get real, real good in Alcoholics Anonymous is I go to AA meetings and I don't tell you the truth. And when I'm not telling you the truth, because there's somebody in the room who's new and they don't want to hear the truth, what happens is my life gets all screwed up. And what I heard when I was real new is that we come to Alcoholics Anonymous to get well. And in the process of getting well, sometimes we don't look so good. But what we do is we just keep coming. You know, It's been a hell of a year for me. I want you to know that I was clean and sober 7 years, July the 11th, 1983. It was 83 I got sober. So you figure it out. serving. And I did a lot of things that I was really ashamed of. I drank a lot. I'm not going to give you a drunk along. I drank and I puked a lot. That's why I always get in front of the toilet before I talk, because I always get all of my praying in front of the toilet. You know, when people, you know, I heard somebody say, you know, I don't understand it. We get here, we're brand new, and we have trouble with God. But how many of us hug the toilet saying, oh God, if you would just get me through this day? I promise I'll never drink again and I'll be good. God, please get me through this day. So if you're new, put that in your hat and chew on it a while. I want to tell you about my last drunk. I want to tell you so much. There's so much to tell you. You know, I went to my first AA meeting with my little brother. He got out of the VA hospital here in San Francisco. He came to the Valley. I was living in Merced. He said, Edie, they won't let me go to AA. Merced? Yeah. Okay. I'll agree to that. I did that night. So I said, well, the least I can do is save his life. He is an awful mess. So I took my little brother to his first AA meeting. And, you know, I don't know. They don't ever, you know what I really think would be a good idea? Is if they would warn you what we do in these AA meetings at the door. Now, I'd had a few beers, and I was feeling a little bit of a buzz that night. But I thought the behavior in that room was incredibly peculiar. You know, they sent around that little sign-in, that sign-in sheet. I have a list. I used to go out with a speech therapist. She's sober now somewhere in Long Beach. I sure liked her. She didn't do much for my speech, though. Anyhow, I'm in this AA meeting, and they stand around this signing sheet, and everybody's signing it, John C., and, you know, that whole thing. So I'm thinking, well, I know what this is. This is a sheet that they turn into welfare. Because, see, why do I know that? Well, I grew up out in the Fillmore. And out in the Fillmore, it's how many people live in a household is contingent on how many cans of pork you get when you go down to the welfare office, right? So I'm thinking, that's just the way that I think because that's where I grew up in that environment. So when I signed in my name, I signed in Edith Frances Cartwright because I didn't want anybody to think I was one of you. God forbid. And you know what happened? The first thing that happened that I thought was really strange is this guy by the name of John said, hi, my name's John and I'm an alcoholic. And everybody in the room screamed at John. Hi, John. So what I thought is John was so brain dead he couldn't remember his name. But then I noticed they did that to everybody. So I said, I am in a room with a bunch of sick people. And I think John's the one that said that he had it so bad that he wore women's underwear to a job interview. And I thought, why tell us? So what happened is and the next thing that happened is they called on Edith Frances Cartwright. Wouldn't you? I would. And what did I say? I couldn't even say my name. I said, I'm not an alcoholic. It's my brother. He's on an abuse. I'm a blood member, and I'm here with him, and he's got problems. So then what happened is they came up to me after the meeting giving me their numbers. Telling me that I ought to keep coming back here. I drank over that for a couple of months. I did a lot of that in the beginning. I came to AA in 1980, and I didn't get sober until 1983 because, no, I don't know why, it's just because that was my path. But I drank a lot at AA. You know, I drank a lot at AA because I couldn't do it. That's why. Because I just couldn't do it. The concept of never ever drinking or using anything ever again I could not fathom it. Because, see, I felt a lot. I had a lot of hate, and I had a lot of pain, and I had a lot of hurt. And the thought of never drinking ever again, I couldn't grasp it. I couldn't grasp it. So I went in and out a lot. I'm not giving you a lot of history because I don't got a whole lot of time. You got it? I was an alcoholic? Okay, let's move on. What happened to me is I was in and out. A lot. This guy one time told me if I took my drill and put my 30 and 69 day chips and put holes in them, I'd have a concho belt to go around me twice. And I'm not proud of that, but what I want, I'm talking to the new people. If you're new, and if you're having a hard time, and if you think you can't make it, you just keep coming back here. No matter what, you just keep coming back. I want to tell you about my last drunk, and then I'm going to tell you about my first trip to recovery. And what it was in my last drunk, that I've been to a lot of meetings, and I'd heard a lot of the stories about those yachts. And I'm a carpenter by trade, and I got off work, and I went to one of those little bars in Winton called the Wagon Wheel. It was a sleazy-ass bar. There was nobody in there that you'd probably even want to have cocktails with, but I felt at home. I got here, and the attitude I got here with is I wore Wrangler jeans, cowboy boots, flannel shirts, 2 6-packs of beer, and fuck you. I want you to know that in sobriety I tapped into my female energy. I can put on my tool bags in the morning and I can dress in spike high heels and come and talk to you today. So I was in this old bar called the Wagon Wheel in Winton, California, having a few cold ones with the boys. And I know it was a few hours later and I kind of woke up. I was a blackout drinker. I was a blackout puking drinker. And these lights are awful. I cannot see anybody. I'm sure you can see me. Jesus Christ, I can't believe these lights. So I wake up, and I'm with this guy driving my car. He's got on a red bandana. He's got tattoos over the majority of his upper body. He has on a Levi jacket. He does not have on a t-shirt. He looks mean. I look in the back seat. There's a woman with a pink boob tube on. She's got Hell's Angels wings permanently tattooed to her chest. I look close. And I thought to myself, I think these are those yes. These are definitely those yes. I didn't know they'd kidnapped me. I don't remember anything. So I said to him, so you got a beer? They said, yeah, Edie. You bought beer in Sacramento. Okay. It's about 2 hours from the Wagon Wheel. We're in the foothills. So where are we going? We're going to Reno. I thought, well, I think these people don't look like, they're not the kind of people you turn to and say, I've changed my mind. They didn't look like I had changed my mind kind of type of people. Like I said, so we're going to Reno. And I went on one, and I decided, well, you know what? You might as well do it up good and find one of those AA numbers and call those people. And I did, and I had on a pair of jeans that just so happened to have one of those AA numbers just all crumbled up in the corner of the 501s, you know. And I, like, got it out. And I was real sick, and I, like, unrolled it, and I'd made it around. I had made it far. I'd gone to Reno. I was now back in Merced. And I called this woman and I said, Mary, this is Edie. Do you remember me? She said, oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. I remember you. Oh, yeah. And I said, you know, you keep talking to me about that place called treatment. If you come and get me, I told her where I was, I'll go to treatment. See, when I was new, when I was going to those meetings, they didn't come up and say, do you think about 90 meetings or 90 days? They said, treatment, Edie, treatment. That's where you need to be, treatment. I was 2 years sober when I got a resentment and realized not everybody went to treatment. So what happened is I came out of a blackout in treatment. Now, you're going to love this. This is absolutely the true story. I woke up in a detox ward in Modesto, California, in a place called Reality. It is still there. It is still called Reality, and I thought God had a hell of a sense of humor. And I was real, real sick. I'd been there a few days already, and I woke up and I was in my yellow lights on. Hard to tell with these lights. Anyhow, I woke up when these sponge slippers were on my feet. Now, I'd been on a drug and alcohol run that made me a little woozy. And I played with those slippers for about 40 minutes. I thought there was, you could use them on a lot of things. You could shower with them, then you could reuse them, you know. You could do a lot of things with these slippers. Then I know my pajamas were Stanislaus County, stamped all over them green. I had on a striped robe, and somebody had smoked prior to me and had burned holes in this robe. I was sitting on a couch where all the foam was picked out, down to the board. There was a television with half a screen. I looked at this old wino and I said, so where are we? He looks at me and he says, you're in detox. And immediately what happened to me is what it addresses in the big book of Alcoholics Anonymous. It's called grandiosity. I have Blue Shield. I can get better facilities than this. And this is for the newcomer. I want you to know that on my last bunk, I didn't have Blue Shield anymore. So from here on out, you listen real close, okay? I went into that little room where they buzz you in. Yeah, they take you out, and then it's like, took me a few minutes to get in there. And I got in there, and when I sat down, there was a black man by the name of Hank, and this man saved my life. Because I looked at him, and I told him my tale of woe. Yeah, Hank. Hi. You know Hank. People from Modesto. Welcome. Anyhow, this man, you guys trying to screw me up? This guy by the name of Hank looked down at me and he said, Edie, you got here and you're real sick. And I said, but you don't understand. I've got a good job. I work for San Jose Steel, and I know I got a company truck somewhere. I got a terrible problem with drugs, but I don't think I'm an alcoholic. And he says, I want you to know that you're an alcoholic in the chronic stages of alcoholism, and that you're one of those nickel slip kids that's so full of hate and so full of hurt that you're untouchable. And that I can give you your clothes and you can leave here, but I want you to know that you're going to die. You don't got long left out there in it. And for some reason, I heard that man that night. I don't even know if it was night or day, but I heard him. And he said, what you need to do is you need to get on your knees, you need to beg God to save you, because you need help, honey. I left there, and I went down, and I got a towel, and I went into the woman's shower area, and I pulled the shower curtain, and I got on my knees, and I said, God, please help me. I don't want to die, and I don't want to live like the people that I grew up with. I don't want to die. I went through the 28-day program in Reality, and after 48 days, they told me that you've got to go. Edie, you need to leave. I don't know about anybody else, but I'm going to tell you that when I finally surrendered, I had done it so long. So I was a liar, a cheat, and a thief when I got here, and it had kicked my ass. And I didn't want to have to go back there anymore and do it ever again. And I didn't think that I could go out into the real world and make it. And the truth is that I left there. But I want to tell you something else, that the 48 days that I was there, I never once told the truth. See, I have my first lover, and she's here tonight. Her and her lover are here, and they're very important in my life. I was in a relationship with Liz for 3 years, and she left me, and I stayed with her mom. Because I don't have my own family, and they love me so good. It's like, God, do I have to go too? I mean, she can go get that other girlfriend, but I don't want to go. And it's like, you know, she came from the kind of family that I always had. So, and I was in one of the family portraits, and when I was in the hospital, I had it up there. And, the whole time that I was there, I never once told them the truth. I never once told them the truth that I grew up out in a film war, that my mother committed suicide, and that I grew up living like a pig. Because I was ashamed. I was afraid that if anybody knew the truth, that they wouldn't let me stay. I was just dying from being terminally cruel. And I don't need nobody. So when I was real little, I learned, whatever you do, you don't cry and let them know, because they need you. You know, I'm crying tonight, but it's because it's because I can't believe it. I mean, I can't believe I'm here, and I know, hey, so what? It's only 2 minutes after 10. And I got a couple of more things to tell you. Well, what time do you have, honey? I got 2 minutes after 10. What time you got? Anyhow, I can't forget the light. It's just blinking right at you. It's awful cool, isn't it? So where am I? God, I get all emotional and I forget where I am in these lights. God, isn't this thing wonderful? I mean, I swear to God, I don't even know you. And look what I'm doing, just being a mess in front of you. If you're new, this is a gift of sobriety. This is a... It took me a long time to realize that. I almost half believe it now. So I got out of treatment and I lied and I never told the truth because I didn't know how to tell the truth because I didn't know how. And I moved to Sacramento so a woman by the name of Grady O'Hara would be my sponsor. Now Grady and I, she's been my sponsor from the very beginning. We've gone through a lot, but she's here tonight to hear me. Right? All those times I went to hear her. But we have a special love and we have a special bond. And I heard her speak in San Jose, and it was the first woman I'd ever heard say fuck in AA. And I thought, that woman can help me from where I've come. That woman can help me. Because, see, I had so much shame, and I come from such a place that I knew that she would understand, and I want you to know that she has. And then I went to Grady and I did my first 4-step, and it was only one paragraph on a yellow piece of paper because I didn't know how to write very well. And when I showed up at her doorstep with that incomplete 4-step, thank God she didn't say to me, oh no, you didn't do it right. There's a Hazleton format. You know what she did? She took me in her home and she took me into her living room and she held me in her arms and I cried. And I did my first 4-step verbally because I didn't think I could write it. And the tremendous healing that has taken place, God knows there's been times when we've been so mad at each other we could hardly be in a room together. But man, I'm telling you what, we've got a relationship today that I cherish. You know, Liz and Kim took me to the doctor on my last drunk, and I'm going to tell this story for the newcomer. My last drunk, I ended up in Stockton Boulevard in the hospital, and I didn't have Blue Shield anymore. And Kim held me in my, held me in her arms when I was in the bathroom, and you know, you remember there. And I said, "Help me, because I just think I'm going to die." And I don't really remember what happened after that, because I kind of went into a blackout. I don't know what was wrong with me that night. But when I woke up, I had IVs in my arms. I had hoses in my nose. And they had me kind of tied down, and they weren't being very nice to me. They leaned down and they said, "Edie, what happened to you? Are you new? Listen to this." I said, "I just had a bad batch of potato salad." That's denial. That's denial. And it took me 2 years to tell that story. See, I just didn't want to look bad. And I lied. I thought, you know, Liz flipped out and said, "Oh, she's an addict alcoholic, she's an addict alcoholic," flipping out in the room, acting like a fool. They say, "Well, you an alcoholic?" I said, "Yes." And he says, "Well, what are you allergic to?" I said, "Just don't give me anything I'll want more of." Never could understand these people that said they wanted to go out and have a glass of wine or a line. I stayed away from people like that. I stayed away from people that said they had a gram. Why bother? First person I ever sponsored, I was whining, and Grady said, "You know, you haven't given your number out to a newcomer. I haven't even seen you reach out to a newcomer. You got a little over a year, and I think it's time." So what I did is I went and found this woman by the name of Jean, and Jean was like this, you know, said alcoholic damage. And I said, "Jean, I'm going to be your sponsor." And Jean said, "Okay." An important thing happened that only happens between one alcoholic sharing with another. She used to call me at 4 o'clock in the morning from Stockton Boulevard, and I only lived 8 blocks away. And I'd tell Jean how I didn't drink. And I used to take her, she used to periodically get locked up in the nut woods, and as I started gathering more people that I sponsored, I used to take them with me when I went to visit Jean. Right? And I don't know if Jean's alive today, and I don't know if she's sober, but I am. So if you're out there and you've got a little time, start reaching out, because it's time that you share the magic of what we have here. There's so much more that I would like to share with you, but I don't have time. But what I'd like for you to do is I'd like for everybody to, will you hold hands for a minute? This is a gift of the newcomers for me. Now watch this hit the floor, how appropriate. What I want you to do is if there's ever been a time in the future, in the past, or recently that you've wanted to drink and you didn't drink, I want you to squeeze a person's hand next to you. Yeah? What I want you to get a sense of is if you're new, that this is a WE program. And that what you have in the hands is the gift of sobriety, and you don't ever have to be alone again. Thank you for letting me share.